Hello, and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm one of your hosts, Jordana Azban, here with my friend and chavruta, Ann Gordon. Our daf today, a ravine, daf nun chet, 58. Moedim l'simcha, everybody. We are in the middle of Sukkot, and as typically happens to us, we're actually going to start in the previous daf with a new Mishnah. So we're really now reading from the bottom of nun zayin, 57 at the bottom. And wait, I just want to preface this with, I know I kept saying before that this whole concept of the surveyor and how they measured it, well, I finally got the information I was waiting for on this upcoming daf, because 58 really explains sort of how the surveying worked, and that really this seemed to have been a job, that somebody's job was really to figure out what the tichum was for each and every town. So how did they go about doing this? So they were allowed to measure the Shabbos limit, the tichum, using a rope which had to be 50 amot, lo pachot v'lo yoter, not more and not less. Sorry, not less and not more. V'lo yimdod ele keneged libo. And when they measure, they have to hold it at their heart, right? You know that if you like, have you ever played limbo and like one person's holding it at their belly button and one person's holding it at their heart, the rope itself is not even. So in order to make sure that sort of it's kept in a straight line, right? And that we have, you know, that the measurement sort of stays consistent, the rope has to be a certain length of 50 amot, and it has to consistently be held at the surveyor's heart. Hayamo deid v'yigia legai or legader. Let's say while he's measuring, he meets a cannon or a fence, right? Mavli'o v'chozer l'midato. So literally the word mavli'o means, I guess, he swallows it, which is sort of an interesting choice of language here. Safaria translates as he spans it, right? But the idea is that he, you know, he's sort of, you would hold the rope over it, right? And then you would go back to measuring it. Higia lahar mavli'o v'chozer l'midato. So let me explain. So if it was the cannon, okay, you would basically be measuring as if that area was flat. You don't add the extra length that it would take to go down the cannon and then go up the cannon. And if you reach a hill, right, it's the same thing. You're not measuring the height. It's you sort of span the hill and assume that the hill was basically flat, and then you v'chozer l'midato, you go back to measuring. Ubuvad shelo yitzei chutz l'tichum. As long as while they do that, they don't end up leaving the tichum, because what they're concerned about is that maybe they'll leave the tichum. Somebody will see the surveyors doing the work, and they'll think, oh, that's actually where the tichum ends. Imei no yachol lahav li'o. But let's say they can't span it. In other words, the width of the cannon is so wide, there isn't a place where you could put the rope on one end and the rope on the other hand, on the other end, right? And actually figure out the flat measurement, right? V'zo amar Rabbi Dostai bar Yonai mishum Rabbi Meir. So with this type of situation, Rabbi Dostai bar Yonai said in the name of Rabbi Meir, Shamati shamakdirin beharim, that one is allowed to pierce the hills, okay? Which means basically, you figure out the measurement as if there was a hole in one side of the hill going to the other side of the hill, and you just completely ignore any difference with an elevation of either going down or going up. Now, it's interesting. The Mishnah doesn't actually tell you how to go about this piercing, and the daf does spend a significant amount of time trying to figure this out, but this was basically the method that was used by the surveyors to figure out how to get to the actual tichum of any area.
So to me, this always comes back to this question of, you know, the actual, let's say, walking measurement versus what we call as the crow flies, right? That it's the flat line across if you could only but do it, right? And there's plenty of terrain where you can't just walk straight across. You have to go up and down and around, whatever. And then, so you're technically, you know, you're getting in more steps as that goes, but you're not actually going further. Again, as long as you don't go out of tchum, you're not actually going further than the surveyor would allow for, right? And again, I keep coming up across this in my day-to-day life nowadays, because I can only go 1,000 meters from my house, with certain exceptions, because of the lockdown in Israel at this time. And so, and this was confusing a little bit, because, you know, let's say you put something into Google Maps, and you're going to see how long does it take to walk, and then you see that it takes it's a kilometer and a half, and that's not a, then and now what? And then you realize that if you don't do the walking map, right, but you just do the straight line, then it's, you know, 3/4 of a kilometer. So you're technically, again, it's not about how much exercise you're getting, it's literally how far the distance is. And I think that this the surveyor, the professional here, what they needed to know how to do was exactly this question of how do you get to that flat line from point A to point B, even though the terrain wasn't an obvious flat surface. The Gemara goes on to discuss this bit here about the Mishnah, where it says, Lo pachot v'lo yoter, right? We're talking about this rope that has to be a 50 amot specifically and very specifically, right? Lo pachot v'lo yoter. It also recalls to me this whole discussion that we've had repeatedly now over whether these measurements are subjective by the person, right? Like, is your tefach, or is it a specific measurement of however many inches or centimeters, whatever? Or is it an objective measure? So here, lo pachot v'lo yoter makes it clear that at this point we're talking about something that is objective. It is not, you know, 50 amot of that long-armed person versus 50 amot of that short-armed person. Tana lo pachot mipnei shemarbeh v'lo yoter mipnei shemema'et. Because if you end up with a rope that is going to be shorter, you know, that is going to be lo pachot v'lo yoter, is going to be less. Right, then your shorter rope is going to actually increase the Shabbat limit, right? Because is the contention is that that rope is going to end up getting stretched out in the hopes of actually making it to the regular 50 amot. And lo yoter, we say no more, because a longer rope is going to actually reduce how far your tchum is, because it's going to be saggy, because it's going to be heavier, because it's going to be longer, and then you're not going to end up with the exact right amount that is in fact Tchum Shabbat. It's interesting to me also off the cuff that we don't, that Tchum Shabbat has its own fence built into it, right? In terms of, like, you've got your 2000 amot, which means that you know, you're already out of the city limits. You don't have to worry too much about, I mean, unless you're going really far to the edge of the 2000 amot, then you're not really gonna worry about breaking tchum. On the other hand, there isn't an additional fence built into this question of what's your siag, what's your tchum Shabbos to make it, you know, at the edge of your 2000 amot. How do you know that you're really, you know, you really got to watch it then? But again, here, this measure gives it really a very precise measurement. And here the Gemara says, how is it that we're going to make sure that we have that precise rope? Amar v'asi ein modedin ele bechevel shel afsakima, right? We can only use the material for the rope is going to be from afsakima. What my afsakima? What is it? Amar v'yabao nargila. It's from nargila. Now, again, this is not so helpful if you don't already know the botany. My nargila, Amrabi Yaakov dikla dechad nivara. It's Rabbi Yaakov says that it is a palm tree that has a fibrous vine that wraps around it. It gives Amrei my af sakima. Rabbi Abba Amar nagila. Rabbi Yaakov Amar adikla dechad gavra. So then there are those who say that it is a palm tree that has what's one fibrous vine, not necessarily wrapped around it. Okay, so basically the point is that there is there are fibers that come from a palm tree, that come from a coconut kind of palm tree, that end up being the best kind of material for this kind of rope, because it does not have it's not going to get messed up as much in terms of stretching it out or shrinkage, right? In terms of the weather, let's say if it gets wet, it doesn't get all bent out of, literally bent out of shape. Then the Gemara says, well, maybe you could use something other than that same afsakima. Tana Amar Rav Yehoshua ben Chananya, Ein lecha shiafel lemedida yoter mishal shelaot shel barzel. Use a wire, use a chain, right? Meaning you certainly don't have to worry about any give or stretching or shrinkage when you're talking about something made out of iron. Aval ma naaseh sharei amra Torah uviyado chevel mida. The problem is that there's a verse already from Sefer Zechariah, which is in the Navi, right? The books of the prophets, where it says a measuring rope. So it has to be a rope, and you can't use a chain because the verse says a rope. And then, Vaktivu v'yada ish kana amida. What about the fact that it says that a man's hand is, in fact, the measuring reed? Right? That should be that again. It should be the person's hand. And here we are back in this question of subjective measurements, except for that at the end of the day, we that is rejected, and we say, well, there's different kinds of ropes, and there's different things that get used for different measurements, but we do not go back to saying that this particular kind of measurement, meaning the 50 amot to determine tchum, is not at all a subjective measurement.
Right. So I just thought this whole discussion of the ropes and other halachic cases where we have to use a rope were interesting. It still makes a little bit the idea that you're going to use a rope because the pasuk in Zechariah says that, even though knowing obviously there's going to be a little give because it's rope, it's a fibrous material, is still interesting to me. You know, like I think they're trying to hang their hat on some piece of Torah, understanding that this is, you know, somewhat of a rabbinic set of laws.
Well, the wimpy answer, I would say, is that that 50 amot chain of iron has got to be really heavy.
Yes, that's also probably true. I didn't think about that. That's probably a practical answer. Yep.
Right? So maybe they just didn't want to, but nobody wants to say, oh, it's too heavy. I don't know. Maybe they would have said it if that had really been the concern, but I am struck by that fact nonetheless.
So I'm just gonna we'll conclude. I'm just gonna just read the end here of this piece, and then we're not gonna read the next Mishnah here. But there's two interesting things here. So the first is imeno yachol lahav liyo, right? So what if they can't pierce or span, you know, this cannon or the hill, right? So the question is, how do they actually go about measuring it? Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis teach, kesed makdirin, right? How do they pierce the hill? Tachton keneged libo, so the person who's lower down holds it by their heart. Elyon keneged margilotav, and the upper person holds it by their ankle. So you basically just sort of take the rope, and you're sort of, and again, there was a previous discussion before of how much incline there needs to be in order to do it, but you're basically going to take the rope and you basically put it at a, you know, sort of a diagonal in a way. So it's ankle to heart. Amar Baye says, Niktinan ein ma ein ma makdirin ela bechavel shel arba meot. And so Abai says, but when you do that, we're going to use a shorter rope, right? Because 50 amot doing it that way, that's like a lot of give, right? You're really sort of not making an accurate measurement for 50 amot worth of rope. So Abai says you have to do this sort of piecemeally by only doing a rope that's 4 amot. And I guess you would just keep going sort of down the hill, or up a cannon, you know, whatever you're going up or down, doing this heel to heart type of measurement. And then the Gemara concludes its discussion of this with the following comment. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Bar Avua. So Rav Nachman says the name of Rabba Bar Avua. Niktinan ein maktirin lo ba'egal rufa v'lo ba'arei miklat mipnei shehein shel Torah. So this concept of piercing spaces, right, of figuring out a different way to measure when there's, you know, an incline or an elevation, right, a decline or an elevation. So he says you're actually not allowed to do that when it comes to the mitzvah of egla rufa or for arei miklat, right? So egla rufa, remember, is mentioned in Devarim and Perek Chof Aleph, which was if there was a dead body found and nobody knew how it was killed or how it got there, right? That's really considered to be sort of a busha. It's shame to the Jewish people. So they would measure out what city the body was closest to. And they need to make sure that it's really a very accurate measurement. And then the city that it was closest to, that body would sort of take responsibility, that sort of saying that like the person who killed that person or the murderer sort of is in their midst, or it happened near that city, and you know they have to do a whole process with this cow to sort of, you know, give kapara to atone for this for this finding of this body. And then for the arei miklat, right, which we talked about last time, right, which were these cities of refuge, how you determine those boundaries so that an accidental murderer can be protected from the goel hadam, from the literally the blood redeemer. That's talked about in Bamidbar Perek Lamed Bet. So we say those actually have to be completely accurate measurements because they're min haTorah. What's fascinating here, though, is it doesn't solve the problem. How do you do that measurement accurately, right? If you still need to have places that are going to have a decline or an incline. So I guess maybe what it's saying is like, I don't know, the surveyors didn't know how to do these things. And maybe this was just a way to make the tichum measurement a little bit easier, because you could see how like they probably frequently needed to revise a tichum measurement based on how much a city grows, if it shrinks or things like that. Whereas these cases of Egla Rufa obviously were rare. And even the Arei Miklat, like once they were settled, they were sort of settled. So I don't know how often the tichums actually changed. Especially understanding, you know, as we learned last time, that there sort of was this outer area that would be left uninhabited. But it's just interesting. It doesn't really give us the information of like, well, then how did they do it accurately?
Right. I find it puzzling. I find the process of handling the topography is going to be the same. You can't plow down a hill because there's a pasuk that says, you know, that this is a Doraita kind of thing.
Right, exactly. So I respect the piece of it saying that, you know, like, look, with a Reuven, which is Derabanan, okay, we're going to allow sort of this, you know, a little bit of the piercing, right, by doing this ankle to heart measurement, you know, that, you know, is not fundamentally completely accurate. But it still leaves us hanging with the question, okay, so how do they accurately do it for these other two measurements? And I don't have a good answer to that.
Although your answer of, you know, how often did they really need to do it might be the right answer.
Right. That's the only thing that I could think of here.
All right. That's our DAF discussion for the day. Thank you for joining us. Rank us, review us where you get your podcast. Come join us on our Facebook page and tell us what you know about surveying.
Yeah,
you know,
do we have
terrain.
A listener? Is anyone here a surveyor? We'd love to talk to you.
Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website, and until tomorrow.